Blog Talk Radio.
52-yard try from the near hash mark to tie the game. 5 seconds left. Reyes the holder. Burns the snapper. It's back. Hold down. Kick is up. And it's plenty long. It's good! It's good! The Red Raiders have tied this game. They've come back from 38-7 down and send it into overtime.
Crabtree on the jailbreak. Here he goes. The 40, 35, 30, 25, 20. Forget it. Five. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
High snap, but he gets it away cleanly, although it's a wobbly kick. Morris takes it as 14. Sidestep one defender. He's got room to the 25, 30, 35, 40. Just the kicker to beat. The 40, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
8 seconds left. They got one timeout, so there's time to make one play to the middle of the field and call a timeout to set up a try, a field goal try. So Harrell in the shotgun from the 28. The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught.
Oh, he breaks. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Unbelievable.
Touchdown, Red Raiders. Michael Crabtree has done it. Michael Crabtree makes the catch at the five, breaks the tackle, and scores.
There's still 1 second on the clock for Texas Tech. Unbelievable, Michael Crabtree.
Oh, my gosh, can you believe that?
What's up, everybody? What is going on? Welcome into another edition of the Victory Bells podcast. I'm Will McKay, and as always, joined by my main man, Matt Clare. What's going on, Matt?
Nothing much, man, on the road home. How about you?
Just trying to enjoy the old weather up here in Lubbock as it gets a little bit warmer after it decided it would be, you know, like 20 degrees and, you know, Antarctica yesterday after it had been 85 for, you know, 5 days. So that's
well,
always
that's good. You got baseball coming up all weekend, so hopefully it's
I'm excited about you know, starting baseball season on, like I said, tomorrow, start on Friday, get to cover, you know, 3-4 games this weekend. So I'm really excited to get to see those guys come out. I think obviously you're going to see them check off a little rust like everybody kind of does this right at the beginning of the year, but really excited to kind of see what all they trot out as far as, you know, different combinations, because I know Coach Tadlock kind of talked about how he really wanted to, you know, trot a whole bunch of different guys out there and try a whole bunch of different things to start things off. But yeah, excited for a weekend of baseball. Looks like should be some great weather. If you're in Lubbock, you should definitely try to get a ticket and head out there. But anyway, man, I think, you know, last week was the end of, I guess last Wednesday was signing day, and, you know, everything kind of went as you kind of planned for it. You obviously ended up with J.F. Thomas and Jameel Johnson, and you ended up with both those guys, and everything else was kind of his plan, but for the most part, that's kind of the class. May add another two guy or two, but for you and I, this is always kind of, you know, the weird part of the year, because, you know, you and I basically just kind of have to empty our brains and start all over and try to forget as much as we can about the 2015 class and just kind of purge ourselves and really just start all over and just kind of force feed yourself with info.
That's true. I mean, the coaches made two 2016 offers on signing day, so there wasn't really much of a rest of the brain or anything like that. So it truly is year-round and all day, every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And today I think you and I were just going to kind of just go kind of broad overview of, you know, what should you guys as Texas Tech fans kind of, you know, expect out of this class? You know, what kind of the themes, what do they need to do, and just kind of where are they at right now? Obviously, we're a whole year away from signing day, which the funny thing is always, you know, you always kind of sit here in February, March, and you're like, man, it's going to be a long time until they sign. And next thing you know, it's the same time the next year. I mean, this was I've covered 4.5 recruiting cycles, I guess, here, and this was my fourth signing day. And it really is crazy just how fast it ends up going by when you think it's going to take forever. But You know, I guess something too, Matt, before we kind of get into everything, I guess now that, you know, you kind of had a full year kind of covering everything, what was just kind of your thoughts, I guess, covering your first full recruiting cycle, man? What did you just kind of think about everything?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I thought that, you know, there was some drama this year with Tech recruiting and, you know, all that certainly went down. I think at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the kids, I don't know, I just realized, you know, that a lot of these kids are getting a bunch of phone calls and it's got to be stressful for them. So, you know, I just try to do my best. I know a lot of people ask me questions on the board or why I do this or why I do that. And I just try to support, you know, whatever's going on recruiting-wise so that those kids know that, you know, I guess I'm there and I'm not going to bug them or do anything else. So for me, just build those relationships. But what I really like the most is getting out in person. You know, I've really liked, you know, getting to meet coaches, networking, and
right.
using some of the things that I've always done in my regular professional life, you know, to what we do on Red Raider Sports and in the Rivals Network. So going to the high school games on a Friday night and then being able to cover 7-on-7 tournament at State, being able to come to Lubbock and stand on the sidelines and cover games and, yeah, just getting a lot of cool stuff that I'm pretty grateful
yeah.
for. So, but yeah, like you said, it zips right by. And you know, I write this. What I was going to say is I write this recruiting notebook. I mean, I took a hiatus there, obviously, with dead periods and National Signing Day. But you know, you should have a new one posted here this week. And I always go through, you know, the notes of the Big 12. And you know, one thing, if you're a Texas Tech fan, you know, obviously the things happened with quarterback situation and all that in 2015 and. You didn't sign a full class, but if you look at what you've got right here in mid-February, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you already have a Colin Wilder and a Tristan Wallace, and I mean, right now, they're even redoing the rankings, but right now you've got a Rivals 250, you know, safety, and you've got a 5.7-rated monster of a dual-threat quarterback. So, you know,
yeah.
I just think that they're two really good building blocks, and both of them play at gigantic programs, one in Dallas, one in Houston. And both of them are in kids' ears about why they should be interested in Texas Tech. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot of good things going on. And for me, what I look at is momentum. You know, a lot of people want to point to practice facilities and the program facilities or the record. I mean, with really what it boils down to at the end of the day, these kids are spending 4 years at that college and they're pursuing a major and they're going to a program, yes, for – you know, the amenities, and yes, for the coaching relationships. But at the end of the day, you know, I think the theme of this signing day was, hey, thanks for signing with us. Our coach is going to the NFL, or our coach is going to this school. So, you know,
yeah.
these days a kid can build a great relationship with a coach, but I think kids are starting to realize that, you know, they better really also be digging that environment as well. And I think the coaches sell that because, you know, again, not to hammer at a point again, but you know, they played at Tech, so it means something to them, and if they've had outside of only, you know, just coaching at Tech. So, you know, there's some proof in that pudding. But also, you know, the facilities and all that, those are in the plans. Those are coming. But I think that they're able to, you know, be in place for 3 years, be on the road for 3 years, you know, cultivate these relationships. And what you might see in 2016, and anybody who's
yeah.
a fan of baseball, and maybe I'll stop my rant here in a minute, but anybody who's a fan of baseball, they know in the minor leagues, right, the Royals 2-3 years ago had the best minor league system. Now the Royals are
yep.
in the World Series and vice versa. And same thing goes, I think, for football recruiting. You know, you can't just jump in unless you take a job at, like, Alabama or Florida and just start grabbing 5 stars. And so especially true at Texas
nope.
Tech with location and just all those different, you know, variables in place. You know, these guys have been really getting after it in recruiting. So I think those relationships and those efforts are going to really be going to pay off now that they're in their, you know, third year of full recruitment and third year of identifying these kids. I mean, they're offering 2017 kids, and that same thing held true when they first got here and even into that second year when they were meeting kids like a Colin Wilder, who nobody knew anything about and had started since his freshman season, built a great relationship. Now he's a commitment. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to say that they're going to land all the kids in Louisiana or it's going to be some, you know, best class ever, but they're going to be able to start getting more and more guys that they want, you know, earlier in the process.
No, absolutely, and I agree with you. And I think, like you said, I think just kind of studying, you know, the history of recruiting as far as not at, you know, traditional power schools and just how, you know, things happen with coaching staffs and just kind of the, you know, when coaches get hired and fired and kind of pivotal points in a coach's span at a school, I think you always kind of point towards that third year, I think, on the field and at the same time on the recruiting trail. I think more so on the recruiting trail is kind of where you see things, like you said, where we're 3 years deep. Once you get 3 years deep, you've been recruiting all those kids that are, you know, going to be seniors since they were, you know, freshmen going to be sophomores. So they've had a whole, their entire high school career where now they've said, oh, I've built relationships with this coach since I was playing, you know, high school football, period. So, and then I think the same thing goes with coaching staffs around the state and coaching staffs around the country that they're interacting with. I think you just kind of finally get that level of comfortability with those guys. And I think going into this year, I think obviously you've held your offensive staff together so far. And I think obviously you're seeing where they're, you know, pulling in the kids they want on offense pretty much, period, no matter who they are. They're pulling a lot of kids they want. On defense, it's obviously been a little bit harder with the, you know, the change of defensive coordinator. But at the same time, you've kept the majority of the staff together, except for one or two coaches the whole time. So I think this year, like you said, I really think that the relationships they've built throughout Texas, Louisiana, California, all these things, I think these are really going to pay off. Excuse me. But, for example, you can kind of rip on this a little bit too, but even already talking to all these kids that are, you know, 2016 kids that I've talked to, you know, the 15, 16 kids that you and I both have talked to each or more, they all just say, you know, I've built up a great relationship with this coach or this coach on the tech staff, and they've been recruiting me for a while. Or, you know, the older guys in this program said, you know, this guy's cool, you know, I like this coach. But yeah, just kind of like you said, I totally agree with you on that point.
Yeah, and just to kind of put a cap on that, as much as I say that there's upside and we all agree in year three, you know, that can culminate or come together, you know, it's also a very, very important year, even, you know, extension aside and all that stuff. I mean, perception and then results-wise on the field. I mean, it's time to not go 4-8, obviously. I don't need to point that out to anyone. But, you know, it's a big year because when we look at it from recruiting, you signed 19 kids. And, yeah, you had some things fall through. That's fine. But, you know, there's a lot of quality in the class. And there's some things to build upon, and you've got a lot of starters coming back next year. However, when you start to project a year forward, you look at now and just, you know, even if they were to add one to two kids late to this 2015 class, you're looking at the ability, you know, early enrollees or not, to add 28 to 30 players on scholarship you know, next year. And that's just a recruiting class. Now, you know, maybe 26, 28 is a more reasonable number. I don't know, because maybe you give some walk-on scholarships. But, you know, anybody that can figure out scholarship numbers, you know, gets a star from me, because I can't. But just working off of that number, you know, working off of that number 25, you only sign 19, so that leaves six open. Let's say you add one or two more guys, that leaves four open. And then you add that to the 25 for next year, that gets you 29. Let's say you give two to three walk-ons a scholarship, that gets you to 26. And now all of that is very generous numbers. But still, you know, we're talking about a bigger class here with the ability to go after kids and take commitments and do some things that maybe they weren't able to do this year because they were, you know, holding out for this prospect or holding out to that prospect. And I'm going to go to the recruiting dinner or function here in Houston to hear some of the comments and hopefully maybe even speak to some of the coaches and get some reactions. But even based off what I've heard, you know, they really thought they were in on these kids, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, just like with all of our everyday jobs and everyday lives, you know, results is really the only thing that matters. And so to not even have one coach listed on that, you know, top recruiters list, whether that means something or not, you know, is a little concerning for me because we cover this, like you said, and we're constantly hearing about Coach Curtis. We're constantly hearing about Coach Haverty. And, you know, with a guy like Lee Hayes, his evaluations are just impeccable. So, you know, it's frustrating to not see those guys on there. But, you know, for me and from you, guys that are talking to these kids week in and week out, I mean, these guys are grinding. These guys are getting after it. And I think that the addition of Coach Jones to give some direction in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and really throughout the state is going to help. And I'm working on a piece. You know, I'm going to let it go for a few weeks here to see what exactly happens. But you're going to see Coach Chev in the DFW area and even in Houston a lot more as well when he's not working the West Coast. So they're going to shift a few things around as well. And, you know, I think it'll just give more presence with the coaches around the state. And they're still going to tag team. They're still going to go at it with two coaches. And you're not going to see, I guess, what you see on those recruiter rankings is what I tried to explain today. You're not going to see this was Coach Morris's guy. Well, it was Coach Morris and it was Coach Hayes. Well, it was Coach Haverty and it was Coach Curtis. I mean, that's why we put both of them on there, is because that's what the kids say.
Right. And just kind of to add to that, on signing day, whenever we were up at the training facility, you know, we got to do group interviews and some of the things with each of the individual position coaches. And every time, you know, myself or someone would ask, they'd say, okay, well, what do you think about, you know, the group of guys that you really were responsible for? And to a man, every single assistant said, well, we don't really do it that way. We all kind of tag team guys. There's nobody I was really individually responsible for. So I think it's kind of a different look at how to attack things. I don't think there's many coaching staffs that really do it that way. Most coaching staffs, you know, just kind of assign a guy to an area and they say, you'll get these kids. But no, they've made it much more of about the staff as a whole. And, you know, I think they want to sell that to recruits where they say, look, you're getting all of us. You're not just getting me, you know, whenever you sign with Texas Tech, obviously. And I think they want to make that a point to kids. And they just want to kind of give them a better idea of the atmosphere and kind of group personality of the coaching staff, if that makes sense, you know, with what I'm saying. But yeah, I think you were kind of talking about Coach Chev a little bit. And I think if you haven't seen it yet, they've officially changed his title to special teams coach and outside receivers coach. And now Coach Morris is the inside receivers coordinator. So with those official kind of changes in job titles, I think you're kind of seeing, like you said, Coach Chev kind of go after more targets in state, and then just kind of letting him kind of loose with that. And people were just kind of wondering, you know, why is Coach Chev just kind of on the West Coast and doing these kind of things? And I think you're seeing the staff start to adapt and change. And I think that's what the whole addition of Coach Jones is to the staff. That's, you know, them adapting and changing and trying to beef up something where they thought they needed to change things.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a guy, you know, 13 years of experience. Let's say the first three, maybe he wasn't engulfed in all the recruiting stuff. That's still 10 years of experience dealing with recruitment, how it gets done, what's important, you know, and especially the concentration of contacts and respect he has in the DFW area. It's just going to work wonders. And I think even before you had some of this that we're talking about, and even before Coach Jones, I mean, let's give these guys credit. I mean, I gave Hayes a tip of the cap for evaluations, but I mean, you know, regardless of who they got committed or not, you know, they're proving that they have an eye for talent. I mean, there are a lot of kids here, even in 2016, you know, I follow all these offers and follow all these kids, and, you know, Houston's my background. I mean, there's at least five kids that I could probably rattle off that Tech offered months ago. I mean, months ago. I mean, we're talking 6 months ago that now, oh, I've just got my 24th offer from Alabama. I mean, that might not mean anything in the end to you know, everyone who wants that Rivals 254 star who might end up committing to an A&M or an Alabama. But, hey, you know, they're identifying those kids early. You know, they're getting in on them. They're building those relationships. And that's going to pay off more than not. And so I just think that's really important as they go along, and it's important to realize that. Now, like I said, and like I'll continue saying, you know, ifs and buts were candy nuts, right? We'd all have a Merry Christmas. You've got to get serious this year about the plan. And I think that's where having Coach Jones along with the director of player personnel, Jason, involved to say, okay, you know, here's your area. I know you guys know how to do it, but there has to be checks and balances. There has to be accountability. There has to be like, okay, look, you know, we really do like this defensive tackle who's a Rivals 100 four-star player. How realistic is it that he's going to set up this visit? How realistic is it that he's going to give us a commitment? We need a backup plan, you know, because that honestly it wasn't around last year. You know, the offers weren't there, and the backup plans weren't there. And I know there were ups and downs with the defensive coordinator, but even here in the new year, we haven't seen new defensive offers. You got one offer to a cornerback out of DeSoto named A.J. Green, who's very talented, who's going to come and visit. He already told me that, and that's great. But at the end of the day, you've got to start getting out there and you got to start making your own offers. And I know that, you know, Coach Gibbs is still kind of new, but, I mean, we're once these recruiting roundups get finished up, man, I think it's, you know, again, it's time to get to work and time to start figuring out who these kids are that you're going to go after.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you said, I think, you know, it's about time that, you know, they're going to have to start to kind of hit the ground running here, you know, in the next week or so. I think a lot of that, too, I think he's still trying to kind of get familiar with his players on the roster now that they kind of finished up the 2015 cycle and just basically trying to solidify up all the kids they already had committed. And like I said, they I know they've spent the last week or week and a half just trying to really get to kind of know the kids that are already on the roster. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, on the defensive side of things, I mean, they've got quite a few offers out, but, I mean, like you said, it's about time for them to kind of start picking it up, and I'm sure they will here, you know, in the next week or two. But anyway, I just figured we'd kind of close this thing out, not a super long podcast, but just kind of close this thing out by just kind of for 15 minutes or so, just kind of talking about maybe some of these prospects in the 2016 class. And we might as well start with your guy who's committed as a quarterback now, apparently, which is Tristan Wallace. And, you know, told you, Matt, I'll kind of let you talk about it since you talked to him. But, you know, he's told you he wants to play quarterback now, so instead of be listed as an athlete. So, you know, that thing is kind of interesting, you know, where things kind of go with, you know, the rest of the quarterbacks now.
Right. I mean, that's a kid that picked up his 11th offer today. And it was, I want to say, the first or second weekend of January when he committed out of the blue. He has the cousins. I can't recall their names at the moment, but they played at Tech, and they've told him a lot of great things. And Tristan's going to be out here in 2 weeks, out in Lubbock on the 28th to visit for the first time, meet with the coaches. But, you know, basically he said he has a really, really great relationship with Coach Morris and with Coach Kingsbury. And every time they connect, they've been talking about the offense. And going back to our first conversation when he had committed, is he said, well, I'm committing as an athlete, and I'm going to play wide receiver. You know, I've played wide receiver before, and I think I could be really good at it. Now, I've met this kid in person. He's every bit of 6'3", 220 pounds, and I don't know if he has an ounce of fat on him. I mean, he is big, and he is already, you know, a full-grown man. He was hurt all last year. So I haven't seen him play in person. I'm not going to tell you what he can and can't do at quarterback, but I just watched a kid who had never started win three straight games and take home a national championship. And that's not to compare the two kids. It's not to compare the two programs or teams. I realize that there's a lot of, you know, talking points there. But the fact of the matter is this is college football. You know, two of the best quarterbacks to ever, you know, come out and win Heismans and do all these things, they're not doing anything in the NFL. They weren't prolific, you know, accurate, you know, prototypical passers. You know, the RG3s of the world, the Tebows, the Johnny Manziels, you know, they weren't, you know, coming out of high school, they weren't these highly rated, you know, gunslinging type quarterbacks either. So if you just put on a tape and you can see what Tristan can do from an athletic standpoint as well, you know, the coaches clearly know what they like. And they're even when he committed, when he told me that at quarterback, I went back to his profile and I read my story again from his commitment. And one of the first quotes was, well, the coaches just like me as an athlete. They told me I could play anywhere that I want. And then he subsequently went into wide receiver. Basically, he just said, look, quarterback's my first love, and that's what I want to do. And they said I could do it. So, you know, there's two things.
Yeah.
There. You know, do you let him do it? Yes. You know, I know that we have him at Rivals, you know, as a 5.7 three-star, one of the 30 or 40 best kids in the state of Texas. But really looking around, a lot of other folks have him as a top 250 type of four-star kid. And we'll see where that goes. However, you know, what I'm saying is that you know, with those kids, just get them onto campus, you know, get them into the program.
Yeah.
And as we kind of touched on before, I mean, we're talking about DeSoto High School. So even his teammate and friend, A.J. Green, who plays cornerback and who already has, you know, three strong offers, is coming to Tech with him. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of influence there. I mean, and then the new wide receiver offer, who's a stud, Trendavian Dixon, they're tweeting back and forth to one another. So, I mean, there's power in that. And I know we've talked about recruits talking and we had the whole Stidham recruiting thing aside. You know, we can't just kind of put all these things in one box and define them. I mean, what happened there was definitely an outlier. So I don't use that to judge the staff or to cast opinions about what's going to happen next. So I don't know. Just with him, he says his first love, that's what he wants to do. And I don't know, that was pretty much it. He was pretty calm and cool about it. But every other coach, including Urban Meyer, told him he could play quarterback. So I just don't see what the big deal is.
No, I agree. I don't think it's a big deal. I think, like you said, I think from the beginning, the Tech coaches were honest with him. They said, look, you know, we just want you to be here. You know, come play what you want to play. If you want to be a receiver, be a receiver. If you want to be a quarterback, fine, be a quarterback. So I think it'll be interesting to see where that all kind of goes and what ultimately happens with him as that, and if he changes his mind or stays with that. But at the same time, you know, you look at all these quarterbacks on teams that are, you know, competitive in the country, not just in, you know, the Big 12, where I think you have more prototypical quarterbacks. But I think a really good example of I guess what I'm trying to say is a guy like Nick Marshall at Auburn, where Nick Marshall was a cornerback before he got to Auburn. And heck, I remember, you know, Tech recruited him as a corner whenever he was at I mean, I talked to him whenever Tech was recruiting him as a corner. But he fit exactly what Auburn wanted to do, and he could run that system like a – and that's really what I think modern college football is about. It's not about having necessarily a guy that, you know, has all these measurables and does this, this, and this. It's about having a guy that fits your system and does exactly what you want. And I think you look at a guy like Christian Wallace, and he can run Tech's system. There's no question in my mind at all.
Yeah. I mean, look at that is one of the more, I guess, you know, offensive forward teams. I know Coach Mathis went to SMU, but, I mean, they go for it on fourth down. They go for two. I mean, they spread it out. He runs the ball. They do all kinds of things. So I just don't see any downside there. Like I said, just get him to campus, figure it out. As long as you keep the kid interested in Tech. I mean, got offer 11 today, and it's February 12th. So
imagine what he's
going to have next year. He's going to have even more. So, I mean, we're talking about a kid that's going to end up with 20-plus offers and who's going to be sought after. And, you know, you just got to, you know, maintain the commitment and see where it goes from there. But, yeah, I mean, not to spend too much more time on him, but it was pretty simple. I mean, he was calm, cool, and collected and said, yeah, it's my first love. That's what I want to do. And I said, okay, did you talk to Coach Morris about it? And he said, oh, yeah. He's like, they're definitely behind me. So, you know, will they continue to pursue other quarterbacks? Absolutely. I think the answer is yes, because you didn't add one in 2015. And, you know, you just got to roll those dice and see where that goes. If Tristan says, well, hey, why are you recruiting another quarterback? Well, you cross that bridge when you get there. Because from a you know, number standpoint, you got to do what you got to do.
No, absolutely. And I agree. And I think they'll continue to keep recruiting guys like Shane Buechele, Shea Patterson, Devin Williams, Zach Smith, other kids. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that they'll keep looking at, I think. And you could commit to potentially see them take, you know, two quarterbacks in this class. But I guess just kind of moving on from that, I guess talking a little bit about quarterback there, just really looking at this class, and you can disagree with me or you can kind of add to this, Matt, and just kind of take your own riff on it, but just kind of looking at the class and needs as a whole of what Tech really needs to kind of do, I think it's kind of a duh statement to say everything kind of starts with the defensive line. They've already offered, you know, 14 kids on the defensive line at defensive end, defensive tackle. Really going to have to hammer that home. And I would guess maybe you might have to end up adding some JC kids there at some point. But you and I have, you know, been trying to reach out to kids and trying to talk to some kids there. But Well, other than the defensive line, I think two other places you look is you look at linebacker, and they've already offered a couple of kids that you and I have talked to that I think they need to add a few linebackers in this class since they only added one in the last class. And they still – and the coaches, several of the coaches have said, and I understand this, they're still going to keep adding offensive linemen. I think they're going to try to take another big offensive line class if they can. Now, I think this is kind of a down year on offensive line in the state of Texas compared to maybe last year, but I still think they're going to try to take a big number of kids. And I think Coach Hayes wants to take a couple of kids in this class that are on the offensive line that are kind of road graders, kids that are can kind of play on the inside or outside either way, but just kids that are kind of mean kids with good work ethics that are good run blockers, just kind of some maulers, if you will. So I think that's kind of where you look at to start out with this class, Matt.
Well, yeah, and, you know, when you talk about the offensive line, you've got a kid or two that's going to be in town on the 28th. And what you mean by road graders are maybe not the 6'6 guys, but the guys that are a little more
right.
compact, help inside in that run game. And, you know, I think what you saw with this particular class is you saw, you know, a lot of those tackle-type guys. But even somebody posted a comment about, you know, one of the coaches mentioning that Dyer could start at center. Now, I've never heard that, and I find it hard to believe. But, hey, I mean, if he can do it, then he's a hell of an offensive lineman. So you just figure it out. I know that Castro's graduating, and somebody's got to play center. And if he gets hurt, somebody has to play center. So I know they have to figure that out. But I think depth is such a big deal on the offensive line. Having a guy – an all-conference guy and a really stand-up guy at left tackle with LaRavens for so many years. You know, I mean, when you lose him after this year too, you know, all this stuff is great when they have all the offense and they translate through. Now the coaches are going to get them on campus and they're going to treat them all like two stars and they're going to, you know, try to bulk them up and make them work hard and get them ready to go. Now, we heard really good things about Murphy and Castaneda from last year. But, I mean, this offensive line class that was just signed and then the one for 2016, they're going to be really important in terms of, you know, guys that are going to be in the program for 1 or 2 years, and they're going to have to grow up fast because they're going to be put onto the field.
Yeah, and think about this. You know, the funny thing is, and I guess I didn't really think about it, and a lot of people really don't think about it looking back on it, but you've had two, you know, all-conference left tackles in a row now. You know, you had Ladry and Waddle. And you basically made kind of a seamless transition from him to LaRaven, and it's pretty rare to do something like that. But, yeah, you're going to have to see if you can, you know, do that again with some of these guys. Maybe a guy like, I think, like Justin Murphy, you kind of hope he might could, you know, maybe be that left tackle, not this year, but next year, as a, whenever he's a redshirt sophomore next year, and kind of keep that going. But, yeah, you go. I mean, you just got to try to keep the train moving in the right direction. And, I don't think you can take any guys in this. Well, I guess none of the guys that you took in the offensive line class, you really can't have any of them be busts if you want to kind of keep going and keep building the momentum that you are as far as positive depth on the offensive line. And I think mirroring that towards the defensive line, that's what they want to do. You know, they want to do the same thing on the defensive line that Coach Hayes has done on the offensive line up to this point.
Well, and I think a sleeper could really be Cody Wheeler. I mean, that's a kid that was not even on the radar whatsoever, and he's not small by any means. I mean, he's already 6'4", 305, if I remember correctly, and he's already played some center. But that could be your solution there after a redshirt season, get the body right, you know, coach him up a little bit there. But when I look at the class, I see Dyer, and I see Madison. And those are two guys. Madison, he's your left tackle. He's up next. I mean, this kid is going to add some weight, and he's going to be good. And Dyer, he's gonna work at either right tackle or he's going to move inside. But, again, just another guy who's just nasty and good and rated highly for a reason. Now, beyond that, Ellison and Steele, Ellison, he's gotta add weight. He's got to get stronger. He's still a pup, though. So red shirt for sure there. Steele is 17 years old, and he's gone through this whole body transformation. But when I saw him, I'm not kidding. I mean, his knuckles, you know, almost touch his knees as long his arms are so long. And so he's got a great, great frame to work with. And he's, like I said, he's still young. Him and Gilmore are the babies of this class, and those are things that we're going to kind of detail, you know, after, you you know, another week or so after signing day goes down. But, I mean, those are kids, too, that you just have to remember they're going to have to get in and develop. But, I mean, just like a Justin Murphy and just like a Castaneda has kind of surprised the coaches, don't be, you know, alarmed if you hear the same thing about a Steele, because he's a very quiet kid, very to himself. It reminds me of a lot of Lil Raven Clark with personality-wise. But that's a kid who's working hard and shed 50 pounds. And like I said, now he's got a great frame to kind of build upon. And if the coaches get him in there and get it right, that's another kid that can play right tackle and move on to the inside. I watched him play this year, and nobody got behind him. I mean, they were running behind him, moving him from left tackle to right tackle. And that's a team that's full of steel that runs the ball a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going back to Cody Wheeler, you know, talking to Coach Hayes a little bit about him on signing day when we were up there, he said that, you know, Cody kind of flew under the radar, he thought, because he grew about, you know, 2 inches and gained quite a bit of weight, you know, going into his senior year. And I think a lot of coaches just didn't, you know, give him a real close second look. And I know Coach Hayes went out there, you know, in the spring and wasn't quite sure, you know, if he was going to be big enough or anything, but then when they went out there again and he saw him, I think, in, you know, October, he was like, wow, you know, Cody grew a lot and he looks really good and has a lot of good weight and has played a lot of different positions and is versatile and, you know, a hard worker and all these kind of things. And I could see him kind of being Wheeler, kind of being a utility guy down the road here in a year or two, just a guy that, whether he's starting or not, you can just say, look, Cody, you know, we're just going to plug you in wherever we need you, man. You know, basically kind of your Band-Aid guy, which you've had guys like that in the past, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's important, you know, that's why we talk about depth, and we'll kind of move on from here. But, you know, you talk about depth because look at the offense you run, you know, and it doesn't even include injuries. I mean, you've got to have guys that are, you know, ship shape and ready to go, and you got to have guys behind them that can come in and provide that stability. I mean, you saw that even this year at the guard positions and even at center at times, you know, the previous year. So, you know, it would be important. But like I said, I trust Coach Hayes, and, you know, I think that he does a good job of getting that done. And what I've seen from the 2016, you know, recruitment cycle, they've already built some relationships, and there may not be the, you know, high four-star kid like a Dyer out there right now. But there's definitely some kids that are pretty good and pretty big that are going to be coming through here. So it'll be interesting to watch. But, yeah, definitely another 4 to 5 linemen. I think you're going to see that every year with Coach Hayes. He's going to want to add at least 4 to 5 linemen.
Yeah, and like I said, just finishing up on that, I think Coach Morris said that he said that they potentially want to have 17 or 18, you know, offensive linemen on the roster at all times. I think they said during the summer, I think they'll have 13 during the summer after all the guys get on campus. So you're getting closer. I think that, yeah, like 13 or 14 is how many they'll have. So you're getting close, but you need another big class without much attrition to kind of get where you're going. I guess just kind of looking at the skill positions real quick on offense at running back and at receiver. I guess just kind of starting with running back, the coaches have said, you know, kind of I've heard that, you know, they want to take two running backs. They want to take kind of an all-purpose guy that kind of fits the mold of what they've been taking, and then they want to take a power back in addition to that. So that's just kind of the plan at the moment. Only have 3 offers out right now, and that would be on the
I was going to say they haven't offered a power back.
Yeah, they haven't offered one yet. So, and the only 2 guys that they really have offered that they might be in on, obviously, would be Bronson Bentley from Sidlow Steel, and then you know, Devoir Whaley. Those are the only two guys they have offered right now, essentially. So probably going to be a lot of movement there, and as far as offers, and we'll kind of see where things go there. Not really, you know, much set in stone there. At receiver, kind of the top guy, I think you'll probably agree with me, the top guy really that they're in on right now would be Devin Duvernay, who, you know, they've built a great relationship with him, and I know you know Devin a little bit better than I do, so.
I don't want to say it's not going to happen, but he texted me the other night to tell me that Cal offered, and so I said, hey, man, it's been a while, you know, tell me what's up, and he told me, you know, things are going good, and so I said, where are you visiting, you know, what do you have set up? Thing was like Stanford, Texas, OU, no mention of Texas Tech, and, you know, I didn't push it, I know he said he still talks to Coach Morris, and there is a good relationship there. However, I think, you know, based on what I'm seeing from who's coming in for the junior day and just the fact that it's Texas, so there's so many wide receivers, I think you're going to start seeing some different top targets. I think right now the guy at the very top of the board, I don't know how realistic it is or not. He had a basketball game, so we weren't able to connect. But Trendavian Dixon, if you guys haven't watched his tape, I kind of like avoided it because he'd already been committed to Baylor for so long. But he decommitted this week, and it was actually the same day he'd gotten a Tech offer. That's not related,
right,
you know, by any means. But, man, this kid, I don't know why he's a three-star right now. I guarantee he'll get a bump. He broke the, I think it's 3A or 2, or whatever it is. He caught more touchdown passes than anyone ever.
39.
Playing Texas high school football. And he made an insane one-handed catch in the state championship game. You just got to watch the kid. I mean, he's really good. So I think you'll see him elevate to that top target. You know, Courtney Lark, he committed to TCU. And, you know, I know we talk about how great Wilder and Wallace are, and I know it's reality because we've kind of mentioned a few of the decommits that were suffered in 2015 that were big, right? And that very well could happen to anybody. But what I'm saying with Lark is I don't buy the fact that that one's over, you know, because these kids go on these junior days and it's all of a sudden they commit. And then earlier that week they told you about their other plans that they have. And all throughout, you know, Courtney Lark said how close he is with Devin Lauderdale and all that. So, you know, clearly no coaches are going to stop recruiting him. But just like they're not going to stop recruiting Wallace and Wilder either, so it's a two-way street. But those were kind of the top targets. I just don't see Duvernay happening right now at this moment. And I would say start paying a lot of attention to Trendavian Dixon because there are some recruits that Kingsbury takes time to really go after, and this kid's been one of them. So I would look at him. And, I mean, there's so many wide receiver offers, and you know that Coach Chev is going to go into – California, and you know Coach Curtis is going to talk to some kids from Louisiana and Florida, and I know the probability of winning those are a little bit smaller, but man, I gotta say, I mean, even, you know, our opinions aside, 2015 wide receiver class, I mean, I don't think
fantastic.
I've seen a better wide receiver class in a long time. I mean, if we think
I
about
agree.
This, we're talking about the 2016 class on February 12th. Now, if we had a time machine and Doc, you know, could take us back to February 12th of 2014, and I told you that you were going to land J.F. Thomas, Kiki Kute, Jonathan Giles, and Tony Brown,
Quan Shorts. Yeah.
And Quan Shorts. You know, and again, you might not even know who Quan Shorts was, whatever, it doesn't matter. But if I would have just told you those first three, you'd be like, damn, you know, I like that.
Sign me up. Let's
do it, you know. And now it's just kind of like, oh, well, that's good. You know, I'm glad they got those guys. I mean, I think it's pretty serious. You know, you get J.F. Thomas on campus. I mean, Carlos Strickland who? I mean, you know, the possibility of adding these guys and what they can do. I mean, just with even before you knew about Thomas, I mean, I was excited watching Brown's film and watching Kute's film, you know, with that commitment in January. I mean, those guys are fast. I mean, those guys are really good players. And really, I haven't talked to Tony Brown a lot, but everything I've heard from his coach and from people around him, that kid's pretty serious about his business and his regimen. So, you know, I just think that you know, at the end of the day, we talk about results. And right there at that position and in this offense, and especially with the depth that they had, I mean, they did a great job. So regardless of where things stand right now in 2016, I just know that, you know, I don't know exactly when we'll post it, but I've got a running list of visitors, and I know that there's several kids coming in town and several kids that they've been talking to recently. So they're going to mix it up, and they're going to add several kids.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I may just go ahead and post that list in the RRC tonight whenever we put that up and just keep adding it each week before that gets here. But I think you've got a bunch of really good kids coming in for that junior day in a couple weeks, and I'm really excited to see what, you know, if they can kind of pull anybody out of that group, because not only are there a bunch of 2016 kids, there are also some 2017 kids that are going to be a really big deal down the road.
Yeah, and it'll be here before you know it. But, you know, and another thing is, I mean, junior days are great and all, but, you know, the camps are even better. You know, camps are going to be here before you know it.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have our rivals camps and all the other subsequent camps around the state. I mean, some kids are going to, you know, you're going to be like, well, where the heck did that kid come from? So, you know, wide receiver, I don't worry about that. Offensive line, like I said, trust Coach Hayes. You know, it looks like you've got a quarterback in place. Got to hold on to him and see what else happens, you know, around there. Running back, you're going to see more offers. You're going to have to. Rakeem Boyd out of Stratford here in Houston, I would say that's probably the next kid that would be up, if you will. But there's also a few kids in Dallas that you and I have discussed as well. And that's another guy that Coach Jinks, I trust what he does at that position. So, again, it may not be the flashiest guy, like a Quentin, not Quentin White, but who am I trying to think of? Spring Dukaney.
Felton.
Right. It might not be the highest rated guy like a Felton, you know, but he's going to find his playmakers. You know, he's going to get them on board. You got Stockton, you got Dolphine. I mean, you've seen what he's been able to do so far. So I trust what he's going to accomplish on that side. But like I said, the offers aren't there right now. They haven't offered that power back. And I don't know where it's come from. I look around the state, and there may be some kids I don't know about, but the Bryson Denley is really small, and he doesn't even start.
Right.
You know, Devon Whaley's really not that big. He's more compact.
Well, that with Bryson, I think Bryson's kind of mini Justin Stockton, you know?
Well, yeah, mini is the key word. I mean, he's more of a scat back. Because when I watched him play, I mean, he lined up probably more at slot receiver than he did at running back. So, I mean, maybe it depended on who they were playing. But like I'm saying, that's not who is going to be taking all your snaps in the Big 12. And maybe I'm completely wrong, but that's what I've seen so far. So, more offers there. But really, man, the 2016 class is all about defense. And I wish there was more for us to talk about. Well, like I said before, the only kid that's received an offer in 2015 or calendar year of 2015 is A.J. Green. So until we have more things to analyze and talk about, all we can look at is who the coaches have already offered. But like you said, the RRC's back, and it's just going to be loaded. I mean, we've just kind of jumped right into 2016, and, you know, we're just going to keep it up and see what goes from there.
Yeah, and I guess just a couple footnotes on defense, I guess. Looking at all these linebackers, you know, we were talking about how good of a wide receiver class it is. I think this is a really, really good crop of linebackers, both outside and inside the country.
Yeah, and there are a lot of kids that are receiving interest that don't have offers yet that could be, you know, definite takes. And I don't know, you know, what their roster numbers look like or anything like that, but I like the guys that they're going after, and I think that you have a great chance with the McKinley Mitchell. I know that Robert Revels, he really likes Tech. And these are kids like, you know, McKinley's 6'3", 220, and, you know, could spin down and play that outside linebacker role. Robert Revels is like a tank. I mean, I want to say he's like 6'1", 6'2". He's already like 235, 240, you know. So, I mean, it's just with what they're going after, you know, I don't think they're wasting any more time with the types of kids or the ratings, you know, per se. And we'll just have to see where it goes. Like I said, it's kind of an effort in kind of, I don't know, pointless because we don't have any offers for you and I to discuss or to analyze. I mean, we know who they offer. We know who they might be talking to. And there's certainly going to be a lot of other kids that make the drive up for the junior day. But, you know, kids you've been in on early who I absolutely love are like Michael Johnson right here down the street from me at Fort Bend Hightower. Yep. You know, that's a kid that's still 16 years old. He's about to be a senior next year, and he's an animal. I mean, I don't know why more schools haven't offered, but Tech was his first offer, and I think he got Washington and La Tech as well. But, I mean, that's a kid that absolutely just gets after the quarterback, and he's already a big body. Like I said, he's only 16, so he's going to look completely different when he's 19, 20. So you know, they're identifying these kids. And like I said, that comes from, you know, really everything we've been talking about is you get out and you meet these coaches and you're there and you're there and you're there. And it's the same thing with me as a recruiting analyst. You know, I could just tweet all day, but when I go to practices and I meet these guys, that's how you learn about a Michael Johnson. That's how you find out about these sophomores and all these other kids. So the more and more they do that, the more and more success they're going to have in terms of landing these kids and kind of growing the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I will say that, you know, we've talked about how good that And I think you and I both have a pretty high opinion of how, and we've already talked about it today, of how well this Tech staff does at evaluating talent and just kind of seeing it before other people do. I think a lot of that has to do with they really just kind of shut off all the outside noise. If they think a kid can play, they're going to offer him, and they're not going to think twice about it. I mean, we've talked about it 100 times before about Corey Dauphine last year, you know, about him, his story. I think, if I remember right, I think Tech was one of the first, they might have been the very first Power 5 school that offered Kirk Merritt this time last year, if I remember right. And there were a couple other kids that are the same way. Even looking at the end of the recruiting cycle, I know that with Terrence Steele, I know Oklahoma State and Baylor both tried to jump in on him at the end. And with Tony Brown, USC and UCLA tried to jump in before signing day. And there's 7 or 8 kids they signed last year that, you know, the last week that other schools tried to come in and swoop up. So I think that really means a lot about how well Tech evaluates.
Well, as we're on the phone right now, Tech just offered C.E. King from down here in Houston, running back Trevion Williams. So there's your new running back offer.
Okay. Who did you say that was?
Trevion Williams.
Okay, cool. I guess I'm going to be honest, I'm totally in the dark with him. What do you kind of know about him?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him at a camp recently, shorts, T-shirts, and it was just, you know, pretty basic stuff.
Yeah.
But it's got, I want to say, 7 to 10 offers right now. I mean, I won't prolong the podcast, but I was just, you know, getting alerts on my phone here. So, but no, definitely.
Yeah, and just kind of looking him up, he's got 14, 15 offers. You and I will figure out more about him. But, yeah, there's a new running back offer, like you said. I'm sure more will come of that here in the last couple of days, or I hear in the next couple of days. I don't know why I said that. But yeah, I guess, you know, that's all just kind of I thought of. Anything else you want to cover before we shut this bad boy down?
No, you said it was going to be short, and then we yammered on for about an hour, so we better cut it off.
Yeah, we always seem to do that. But hey, man, we're having fun doing it, so that's all that really matters. Always have a good time doing this with you. Hope all you guys that listen have a good time listening and getting recruiting with us. But yeah, that's it for this week. Thanks again for listening to the Victory Buffs podcast. I'm Will McKay. He's Matt Clare. Hope you all guys, you have a fantastic weekend, and go out to baseball if you can.
See ya.